Kia ora and welcome to this week's episode of Sky Sports Playmakers, an opportunity for us to sit down and have a chat with maybe one of the greats, one of the legends, one of the characters in and around the game of rugby union. And this week, there's no doubt he's a great. He's All Black number 1083. He is former All Black and now retired rugby player. He's finally come to the end of it. Kieran Reid, like 127 test matches, 157 games for the Crusaders. Let's go back and, well, let's go and start at the end, actually. You finished in Japan, you've finally hung him up, you've finished MIQ, you've gone home. Welcome back to New Zealand, but let's talk about that last experience. Going to Japan, obviously significantly different with what happened around COVID. How was that last rugby experience for you?
Oh, look, it was a great experience. It's nice to be here, Goldie. But certainly was different, I think, to what guys who had been up to Japan in the past have talked about it. I think what's special about Japan is the connections you make outside of the game and the time that you have to spend time with family and get to see a part of the world that you wouldn't usually get to see. So with COVID, it was a little bit different. My family didn't come up for the second season this year. And we're in a bubble. So it's basically go to training and then go home and you're stuck at home and, you know, in a small house by myself and couldn't even meet up with other teammates for dinner or anything like that. So it was a little bit strange in that respect, but still really enjoyed it. The people up there are fantastic. Our team was great. So we're a great bunch of boys up there.
You got COVID, right?
Yeah, we did. It swept through our team. It kind of went through probably half or majority of the teams up there in January. So it was, it was pretty strange. It wasn't the best experience. I don't think you'd want to be going through it. Had a couple of days which were, you know, pretty bad, and then managed to come right and had no effects since. So very lucky.
Okay, one of the things I want to talk about in this pod, because we career, you know, back-to-back World Cup winner, you know, you've been to the very, very top, but, you know, all of those test matches. I want to talk a bit about, you know, being a product of your environment. I'm a believer in that. And as you go through your rugby career, you're in so many different teams and sides. And, you know, before we talk about specifics, I mean, are you an advocate for that? Do you believe in the fact that the amount of time you spend with groups, it does tend to change you as an individual and as a person?
Yeah, I think it does. I think certainly your environment will have a big impact on who you are and definitely the people you hang around most. I've been very fortunate to be in environments that have been highly successful, and there's reasons for those, which is, you know, how it's led, what you strive for, how you do those things. I've just really enjoyed it. I think, as you said, like the environments you're a part of, you can make them better by adding your bit to them. And, I've really enjoyed the rugby environments I've been involved in.
Of course, for individuals, it's different for everybody, right? So you go into an environment and you've got different coaches and you've got different staff and those things are a moving beast. But quite often as an athlete, you have to change. I mean, what did you, now you maybe had some more time to reflect and over the course of your career, how do you think you changed as you went through the steps, starting off with Canterbury, you know, going through the Crusaders, different coaching staff? I mean, how do you think it changed you? And of course, just getting older and maturing and life and family. But when you started early on, what were the changes you think you noticed the most?
Oh, look, I think, I was very quiet, very probably not shy, I guess, type of person when I first came in. I think I was naturally potentially someone who wanted to lead in his actions, but I was very quiet in the way I did that. And I think involved in Canterbury, Crusaders, obviously early on, the All Blacks, it just, once you're involved in teams and you learn off guys, experienced guys, and you got confidence to go out and perform on the field, it gives you confidence off the field as well. And so I certainly grew my personality and who I am over those years, I think. And rugby was a great outlet for me to grow confidence in myself. Being able to do that with your mates is always a good thing. And a lot of teammates who I really looked up to, suddenly I was playing with them getting respect from them. And that gives you a lot of confidence as well.
does that mean, you know, decisions you make where you go and play, particularly when you're early and young, were those significant and key for you, believing the environment was going to be right for you?
Yeah, I think I always enjoyed that. Like growing up, I think it was like I wanted to feel comfortable, I guess, in where I was. And, you know, if I wasn't, I was, you know, perhaps didn't perform as well. So, you know, it's always hard to know. I think, you know, at the time, Canterbury and Crusaders were a leading club. And for me to go down there, I think it was more the fact that I was wanted, you know. There was a club that, you know, really put out the invite to me and wanted me to come down. And so when you're loved and when you're, you know, you're valued, I think you want to put in for that team. And I certainly felt that from the moment I signed to go down there. And I really enjoyed my time, I guess, getting to grow my footy down there.
So in terms of playing and working with coaches, I mean, I remember when I was playing, you know, I always felt as though I had a special and strong relationship with coaches. I could sit down and spend time with them. And even as a young player, maybe from time to time with Laurie Mains, it was easier not to. You know, you've always, you know, it was okay. Let's just stay on task and let's keep the head down. But I mean, for you, was that part of your brief, the fact you wanted to spend time with management and coaches and get to understand and realise that maybe you wanted to have a leadership role in the future?
Yes, it is. Like I was always that guy who wanted to learn and wanted to get better, and always felt that those conversations, I could actually add something in those conversations as well. So, you know, without actually knowing that I had too much knowledge or base of knowledge when I was younger, I think you just kind of fall into those conversations with your coaches. But I enjoyed talking about the game. I enjoyed talking about how you can get better personally as an individual in the game and as well as outside of it. I think I guess those mentors and coaches that I had early on were great at really backing up the abilities I had and giving me confidence to go out and show that on the field.
So if you're talking about someone particularly, I'll throw a few names to you. Sir Graham Henry, your relationship with him?
Yes, yeah, really good. I think it's, for a young player, it was tough, I think, to come in and have Ted as your coach because of the nature of what he was as a legend, but very tough and things. But I think for me, and my relationship with him was strong, and, you know, we could chat about the game, and he kind of helped me get into the lineouts with the All Blacks when they swapped around in 2009, and he coached the forwards for a year. So that was my intro to coaching lineouts, and I'd only been in the team for not even a year. So it was for him to show that confidence in myself, and you know, that's the way he did it. You know, he could just bring the best out of individuals and out of the team and in certain ways.
Steve Hansen?
Yeah, Steve has been there from the start in the All Blacks, most definitely. You know, my first conversation with him was him telling me I'd missed out on the All Blacks in 2008. And it was a one of, you know, I was pretty gutted at the time. But for him to call me and to say, look, you know, we do see you as a long-term All Black and we want to really look after you. So while I kind of was a bit pissed off when I got the phone call with him, I think looking back, it was, you know, a great way to start our relationship. The fact that he did call me and got in touch, and it's been a great relationship, and between ourselves, I think, you know, he challenges me and I challenge him. And certainly, you know, when I was captain, and I think that got the best out of the team. You know, he's a brilliant kind of intuitive coach. So you can kind of always got a feel and a finger on the pulse, which I think you know, learnt a lot off him from that.
So someone who coached you and coached me as well was Wayne Smith, Techno. The fact that, yep, you know, here's a guy who's got a huge amount of mana and credit for what he's done in all the environments he's been in. But there's no doubt he's got a lot of information. How do you manage that? I mean, because bottom line, his determination to be and make anyone better as an individual, how was your relationship with him? How did he help you?
A lot like what you've just said. You know, he had the data he works off, the the information and knowledge that he has around the game, and you know, the research that he'd put in before most other coaches and analysts were around. He was doing that himself, you know. So, yeah, technically he helped me really strongly, and I think he also, for me, because he was an ex-player, he understood, you know, exactly what it means as an All Black. And you know, he said, he always, you know, the story he tells is that, you know, I wasn't going to be the greatest All Black, but I could play a part in creating a great All Black team and be involved in a great All Black team. And you know, for any player, I think, and any person, that's what you want to do. And I think for me, that really, I wanted to do that as well. You know, like, you want to be part of a team. And so yeah, Smitty, great mates, and yeah, all those guys, really, you know, you spend a lot of time with them, and yeah, great relationships.
Before we talk about Scott Robertson, I want to talk about, in terms of creating that successful culture, because everyone seems to be looking for that, you know, that piece of magic, the thing that's different about being maybe part of the All Blacks or part of a Champion Crusaders side, and you've been in champion environments. To me, you know, if you had to nail down and the critical aspects of being part of an environment and team, you know, and you get a lot of these catchphrases, but for you, when you look at it and you know, you get a sense within a group, what are the things that are critical to having success?
Well, I think, you know, you've all got to be aligned is important. So the whole team has to be aligned and really motivated to go after whatever it is you're striving for. You know, and I feel it's you know, in rugby these days, winning's the byproduct. I think it's got to be bigger than that in most environments. So, you know, it's getting alignment and connection to that, and then driving standards and driving attitudes, really, is the big one. So leaders are important in doing that, and then getting the rest of the team to jump on board and really understand, you know, why they're doing this. It's the bigger picture, and so being selfless is really important. And so the teams, yeah, which I've been involved in, they've always had that, and it's generally worked out pretty successful.
Do you think, though, for the All Blacks, that took some time through the 2000s, the mid-2000s, to get to that point, to achieve that success? And you think about, you know, those great runs that the All Blacks had. You were part of a great side, and, you know, Richie McCaw was a big part of that. But did he set that standard initially for the group to learn and understand and for you guys to then build and carry on?
Yeah, I think those guys like Richie, you know, Dan, Ma, Kevy, all those guys had come through, you know, a disappointment and come through, you know, World Cups where they hadn't been successful over a couple of periods. And, you know, I came in at a point where it was changing. Ted, to his credit, was changing. I think the coaches were changing. And the players were taking potentially more control of the team, which was, you know, what had to happen. And so, yeah, those leaders who I mentioned and other guys as well, you know, started to take real control of our team, and we started to focus on who we were, and you know, more than, you know, just being out there and playing well. It was about striving to be better. So it's certainly probably from that point, or from when I kind of came in, you know, it didn't happen straight away. You know, we lost three times to the Springboks in 2009. So it takes time, you know, to build these processes. And but I think that drive that Richie and those other players had, burnt out of, I guess, disappointment previously, it rubbed off on me, it rubbed off on a lot of those other new guys who came into the team.
It seemed as though there was a real transition about how you dealt with adversity as a team. The fact that how you looked at challenges that were in front, you know, a lot of talk around this mantra of walking towards things, you know, a lot of key words and key drivers. But how do you live by those day by day? And how you talked about getting buy-in. Did you get a sense that, you know, along the way, yes, you want people to be themselves, but you also have to encourage change? Was that difficult in some individuals, you know, when you know that to get the collective going in the right direction, some people are going to have to make sacrifices?
I don't think it's Well, yes and no, it's difficult. I think the key thing is that you've got the right people in the environment in the first place, I guess, that, you know, if you're willing to be a part of a team, especially a team like the All Blacks, any player that comes in will tell you they'll do whatever is needed for the team. And because they genuinely care about playing for the All Blacks, playing, representing our country. So for the All Blacks, it's not difficult. For, you know, other teams, it potentially is a little bit harder, but... you know, you want guys to be individuals. You want the individuality to shine, because that's what makes teams great. But if you're all connected by the strong values, standards that you uphold, then I think there's a strong ness, I guess, in the collectivity of going in the same direction together.
So you get success. How do you celebrate it then, when you've put so much into it, and the All Blacks is a challenging environment, very much you're in the public eye, but you've put in all of this hard work, this discipline, this change, this sacrifice, as groups? I mean, how do you celebrate that success and enjoy it along the way? How important was that in terms of the journey?
I think it's really important. I think it's a really hard thing to do. And along the way, I struggled, and a lot of guys struggle with that, because the outlet is quite hard to find. You know, we're on to the next test match straight away. You know, you can't afford to, you know, potentially do what you did in your day and have a few beers and expect to turn up the next day or on Monday in the same physical, you know, space as you would if you didn't. So, you know, you got to be careful around that, but you do have to find outlets. And I think what Steve and got and our management team and our leaders and stuff found is that you can find time for enjoyment and fun during the week. So it's important to do that. And you know, it doesn't have to be based around the alcohol. It can be based around just enjoying each other's company. And you know, connecting socially creates stronger bonds, I feel, for the team and that trust that you need when you go up to the field with each other and really want to trust and back that guy who's standing next to you.
So there's a level of pressure at an All Black level. Let's take it down a level now at Super Rugby and the Crusaders' journey and the challenges through that. You won four titles, but if we look at that and we look at, okay, yes, there's the same level. Is there the same level of expectation when you're playing for the Crusaders as there was for the All Blacks? And was there a different level of enjoyment? Was it different doing it in Christchurch? Was it, you know, the challenges you faced, and so many, you know, you think about the Christchurch earthquakes and then the mosque attack, and, you know, all of these things that as a unit, as a family, you went through. How different was that to, say, the All Blacks?
Yeah, it is different. You know, the All Blacks, the expectation and scrutiny is, you know, you can't compare that. But if you talk about the Crusaders, our expectation is to win a title every year we turned up. So in that respect, you know, when we didn't, and we had a number of years between when I won my first one in 2008 to 2017, where we didn't. So every year you'd turn up expecting to win. And when we didn't, it was extremely disappointing. But what you get at the Super Rugby level is an ability to, I guess, connect with the guys a lot more than what you do in the All Blacks. You know, you obviously live here, you know, for the majority of the year. You know, you go out for dinner with each other. Your partners get to know each other a lot better. Your kids get to know each other. And so the connections become really strong. I think that's what drives the teams, and here in Crusaders it's great. You know, most of the guys live within 10-15 minutes of each other. You catch up for lunch after trainings, go for dinners with your partners, and that connection is really important, and the Crusaders have always valued that outside of the game, which I feel really helps our culture and helps our team. And those connections and those bonds, I think, you know, will last for a lifetime. And when it comes down to it on the field, it makes you really want to play for each other, which is crucial.
So you talk about this, you talk about these behaviours, and obviously there's two environments. So that's where I come back to this, you know, through the course of of your career. You're 35 years old now. You've gone through all of these different stages. I mean, for you, where have been the key turning points for you in terms of as career as a player, but also as an individual and as a person? Have you sat down and thought about that? Is that something that you're aware of? Because I know one thing that became, you know, one of the catchphrases through New Zealand rugby for a while was that self-awareness. You know, quite often that internal looking at yourselves. And I wish it was something that maybe through my era we'd gone through a little bit more of, you know, spending time thinking about that. Was that something you were conscious of through the course of those difficult and challenging times?
I think you're not 100% conscious of what you're doing in those, some of those times. But I feel, looking back on it, like I was pretty open to change. I was, you know, pretty relaxed character, so could roll with punches that presented itself my way, and I feel I was able to adapt, which was great in those things. And I think that's important, you know, as a person in any kind of an organisation, especially one that has pressure and expectations thrown at you. So, I guess there's different things. Like if you look back at, say, like Crusaders, when the earthquake came along, like that, that year playing was one that kind of shaped a lot of me and a lot of us in the team, you know, in terms of how you process things, how you go about your business when, you know, at home you've got your wife and baby and you're trying to go out and play a game on the other side of the world, and you're worried about an earthquake and things. So being able to, figure out ways to deal with different things. And, so it took a lot of lessons from those years.
Look, I think we should never underestimate the consistency of the group, the Crusaders' performance, the way from year on year on year they continue to perform. And you've managed to find your way in this position that it was a bit like when Auckland were in their heyday in the late 80s and early 90s, the fact there was that almost, I suppose, a bit of animosity, let's put it kindly, from the rest of the country. But is that something that you take a critical amount of pride in, the fact that that was the culture and the expectation and the level of consistency that separated you from everybody else? And did that build on itself as you got further in your career?
Oh, yeah. It was, for me, yeah, it's all I've known. And, you know, playing for the Crusaders, playing for the All Blacks, every game you play, the team opposite you is probably playing their best game of the year because they want to knock over you guys, because you're the supposedly the top of the pile. So that means you just can't rest on your laurels, and I think that's what makes Crusaders who they were over those number of years, is that we can't switch off for a second. So we're always continually trying to improve. Personally, you wanted to keep preparing as well as you could, because the team opposite was going to have their best game against you. So acknowledging that, knowing that was great. And you want to go out there and prove them wrong, or prove them right, really, and show them that, yep, we are that team that you expect us to be. I think it's shown that, you know, for us, those number of years where we didn't win a championship, you know, if you look at it, we made the finals all but one year. And so we're good enough too, and we didn't for a number of reasons. But, you know, it shows the consistency of where we're at, and all but a couple of things that happened. It would have been great to have a couple other titles, but it made that when we did get back in the winner's circle a lot sweeter.
Yeah, I think it's a remarkable legacy that the Crusaders have put together, because this is a very challenging competition year on year, you know, and people talk about the fact that it's not, you know, maybe not as competitive as it used to be, but I think the top end never changes. It's not the fact that teams aren't even. And so if you think about your career then, you think about how you earned the right to be captain, to be the leader of both the All Blacks, and you experienced it with the Crusaders. When you think about that, what changes when you get that mantra, when you get that opportunity to wear the captain's armband? And how did it change you?
I think by the time I led both teams officially, like I'd captained the Crusaders probably about 20, 30 times before was officially captain, I guess, because Richie had been, you know, was out a little bit. So I was used to it and I was ready and I wanted it. And same with the All Blacks, you know, I'd captain 12 or so times before I was officially captain. So I was ready at that time and I actually really wanted to be the leader and I wanted to add and give to the team. And I didn't have to change too much because it was what I was doing anyway for those teams before being named captain. And, you know, I think that's the strongest thing that you can do is be true to yourself as a leader and you know, back the type of person you are. And that's what gets the respect out of the guys that, you know, you're leading.
Is it hard, though, knowing that not everyone's going to like what you're going to say sometimes?
I think you do go through periods of that where you want to be, you know, you want to be liked. That's natural as any human being.
Yeah.
There's decisions you've got to make that, you know, aren't going to please everyone. But that's the nature of where you're at. But also, I think it, you know, it does change. Like it is always hard. You're obviously connecting more with the coaches as well, which. Means it can be harder to connect with the players as much, but I tried to consciously make sure I made sure I had time for everyone in our teams that I was involved in, and tried to connect as much with the younger guys as the older players who were good mates as well.
Who did you lean on if you needed to lean on? Did you need to lean on anybody through the course of that time when you went through some challenges where, you know, all of a sudden the scrutiny becomes on of it, those back-to-back losses, performances aren't going quite as well. Was there someone in particular or a number of people that you relied on to, I suppose, help you make decisions and deliver the right message?
Yeah, look, I think in the All Blacks and things, it was more a collective. Like, certainly Steve was good for me. Gilbert Anoka as well was in terms of being able to just connect and download a lot of what you're feeling was also good. And in terms of players, Sam Whitelock was someone who I could talk to about, you know, because he's obviously there and a part of it, knows what we're going through. So someone who I could just share with, and it wasn't necessarily talking about things. It was more just, you know, you could just go out for a coffee with some of the guys or go play some cards and get your mind off it. And that's just as good as those debriefs and things, and just reminding yourself and of why you play the game and why you've been doing what you've been doing, and just to trust the process of, you know, of what you're doing.
Do the players change year on year in terms of personality when you see guys coming in, younger guys coming in? Is it more and more difficult?
I don't know. The players have certainly changed, I guess, from when I came in to the team. Like, it was still pretty old school, I guess, in some aspects of the game. You know, in terms of how you looked after the young kids, how it was a bit more of an old school feeling to when I left a couple of years ago. You know, now guys, you know, it's just a different nature. It's the age of social media. It's, you know, they're sensitive to different things to what, you know, myself and some of the older guys were. But when you drill down into it and you talk to these guys, they care just as much, and they care about the jersey. They want to do well as well as, you know, what we did when we were playing. So it's getting that connected together somehow, and it is a little bit difficult, I think. But, you know, and the basis of it is there. So it's just making sure that you put the time into to get to know them and work the best way to move forward.
Is the power of the All Black jersey and the Crusaders jersey, the Highlanders jersey, the Chiefs, obviously the Blues, the Hurricanes, do you think the power of the jersey is well and truly still there for these young guys coming through?
Yeah, I do. I certainly do. I feel you can just probably see it, you know, the way Super Rugby Aotearoa has been played over the last couple of years, how much it means to the guys. And definitely they're there. They want to play for their team. They want to represent them. There's so much connection, I guess, with their regions. You know, I can only speak from the Crusaders' point of view, but, you know, the connection that we have here in Christchurch and our greater region is really special. You know, I see that around the rest of the country as well.
Rugby's become, in some ways, and we talk about it a lot now, a gladiatorial sport. Very, very physical, confrontational. You know, the contacts in the game, the collisions are significantly larger than they ever were. They continue to get more and more. And you suffered some pretty challenging physical challenges through the course of your career. You know, how is it recovering and dealing with those and finding a way back from significant concussion, back injury, significant back injury that you had, overcoming those, you know, when you think about the way the nature of the game's gone, how much of that physicality and dealing with it and the mental side of the game, we always used to talk about it as the top 2 inches, but preparing yourself for what is in front of you on a weekly basis now, has that become one of the biggest challenges for the modern player?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's the physicality of the game has certainly increased, and but so is the, you know, the science behind it and all the physical performance that goes in now. So yes, it looks a lot, you know, more physical, but the guys are putting in so much more effort in the gym, you know, in their physical conditioning that they're prepared for that and they're able to adapt. And so that certainly grew over my time from when I first came in. In terms of going to the gym and getting your body in the right way, the rehab guys do, the prehab, all those little extra things that you know, never was done when I first came in, is all there. So that's one part of it, but the mental side of the game is still probably the biggest part, and defines the good and the great players. It's been able to do that week in, week out. Everyone can have one great game, but it's about being consistent, and it's about making sure that you put out your best foot forward every week, and you can only do that through your preparation and the consistency of that. I think if you talk about kind of coming back from injuries or things like that, you've got to be pretty strong around your resilience there, don't you? And it's about ensuring that you connect and you trust a lot of the important people around you, and really just, you know, make sure that you go through the process properly and get your body in the right nick to go out and do it again. But I'm certainly watching it on TV now, and I'm pretty happy to be retired there, Goldie.
Because that's an assumption we have here about the players that go to Japan. Let's go back to where we started. When you go to Japan, and a lot of players are going there for a sabbatical, taking a break. Obviously, the players get well and truly compensated for that. But the market's big. There's a lot of passion. The clubs are determined to try and win titles. Is that the reality? The fact when you go up there that it is... We know it's not a holiday because you have to train hard, but is it a genuine, is it an easier level, particularly on a physical standpoint, and does that help your the mental side of the game?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it is. You know, it's a step down off Super Rugby, and you know, I'd say it's similar to, you know, the NPC, or you know, maybe not as physical as the NPC, but certainly as fast and play in the big games are certainly right up there. Probably the thing in Japan, though, you know, you've got maybe two or three, four great teams, maybe a couple others who are competitive, and then you've got a few that, you know, aren't quite as competitive. So in those games, I guess it's not as full on, so which you don't get here in New Zealand. So the mental aspect of that is great. What I found going up there was... just the whole relaxing of the pressure and expectation after coming out of, you know, 10, 12 years or so of, you know, wanting to do so well for your team. It was just more of a mental kind of relaxation to be able to turn up for footy training. And as soon as footy training was finished, was just forget about it and just go home and totally switch off. Whereas, you know, for all my career here, you just couldn't really do that. You always were thinking about what you could do better. You know, the things you could work on or how the team could go. So mentally that was very refreshing to have. And then, yeah, the physicalness of it is a good thing to add as well.
So the playing career finishes there. I guarantee that someone's going to convince you to put on a pair of boots at some point, and it'll be some charity game, and all of a sudden, because I happened to me, the Classics came calling and said, look, you know, time to go on tour with the lads again. But I'm not sure, I'm sure you're not there, but now you're on that journey which starts, and it started for all of us, is the, what do I do now? What's up next? Was this something while you're in Japan and you're locked in your room and you're going, right, what am I going to, I know I'm going home, what am I going to do next? And had you started to plan for this a while ago?
Yeah, I had. So, I've always been keen around the leadership side of things. Like, I love sport and I love, you know, what it does to helps people and team sports especially. But, what can that do? How can I help people get better in their lives? And that's sport, but it's also business. So I thought maybe, okay, something I can create as a business around leadership. So that's what I've been thinking over the last few years and been chipping away at a few different avenues in that. And while I was in Japan this year, I did some study on an applied management degree, and it was a real introspective look at, I guess, all my learnings over my career and my life. And it's really set me up to what I'm hopefully going to do in the future, which is at the moment really, trying to create a leadership program which I can run and go into, clubs, sports teams, rugby initially, and then hopefully take that into businesses and really help out teams' leadership.
And that's a, you look around the difference between a lot of the top sides, a lot of top organisations. I mean, we talk so much about the talent that you have, and most teams have potential, right? Do you believe that the leadership side of things is where, a lot of organisations do fall down, is the fact they can't quite find the way to create that environment to get the best out of the people they've got?
Yeah, I think, your culture and environment is led and dictated to by your leaders, so it is important that they get that right, because they're the ones who have the influence over the rest of the team, and they'll follow what is shown. So, when it's potentially not going as well as you could, I think you have to look at the top first, and having a good look at yourself is important, and then finding ways to improve and what you can do to get better, because there's many layers to leadership and to doing that, but certainly it's important that the people in those positions, they respect what they have, because even you have that influence on the rest of your team, so you've got to respect that.
Is it daunting, this next stage? Are you daunted by the fact and the unknown, and like you say, when you are in search of what's happening next?
A little bit. Like, I'm certainly obviously very fortunate and proud to have the career I've had, and I want to try and spend as much time as I can with my kids now, because it's been a long time without dad being around and some aspects. So I want to do that, but also I want to give back to the game, and I want something to pass on and know of. It's more than the rugby player. So I'm excited by that, but it is a little bit daunting, because it is an unknown. It's something that you're completely not used to. So it's a mixture, 100%.
But you've signed on with us for a few games, which is fantastic. The series coming up, I'll be working alongside you, which will be great. From your standpoint, is this just the fact that you want to stay well and truly connected with the game?
Yeah, look, I still love the game and I want to connect with it. And I felt it was a great opportunity, just to come along and talk some code with you, Goldie. I enjoy that. So I've always enjoyed that, a little bit of that side of things over the years in terms of the media stuff. It has been challenging in some ways, and always is, but you always feel it's nice to give a little perspective, and haven't been out of the game for too long, so hopefully I can give my perspective as well as I can.
And just lastly, we look at the game now, do you sit back and do you enjoy what, do you think you'll be good at watching? Because that's the thing I struggle with for a start, is the fact you're sitting there on the sidelines and not some of the fact that, because it's hard not to be critical, because you're sitting and going, I want, but also by the same token, you know how hard it is and difficult is it out there. Is it going to be a challenge for you when you're sitting there and going, I know most of these guys, I might just, you know, how hard do you go at it? Or the fact that they know the fact, and this is another question for you, do you know when you're playing well and when you're not playing well? Is that, as players, because I honestly think that was, I knew when I wasn't playing well, I knew when I was playing well, and I knew and expected and welcomed some criticism from time to time?
Yeah, so on that last question, you know, you definitely do know when you're playing well or not. You know, and a lot of the time, sometimes it could be different to what the media and stuff see, you know, because they don't see the full picture. But you know personally, you know deep down if you've had a bad game or not, and it's about owning that. And in all honesty for myself, you know, none of the, you know, criticism or whatever it was that was written in the paper could be worse than you reviewing your own game. And so that was water off a duck's back from my point of view. And then also, I guess from me now, like in terms of watching games, you know, I was in Japan when I was up there. I could sit down and watch Crusaders and just be a fan. I actually really enjoyed that as well. And I think for the All Blacks, I've only watched on TV, but I still care about a lot of those guys. I've played with a majority of them, and I just want them to do well. So basically, that's what I'm doing, sitting down when I'm watching. So I'm enjoying it.
All right, mate. Well, look, it's been great to have a chat with you. Welcome back to New Zealand. Good luck with the next endeavour, the next journey. And I can't wait to work with you on these next three test matches, Tonga, Fiji and Fiji. And, mate, I have no doubt that you're going to have an influence no matter what area of the game, whether it be in sport or in business or in leadership. You'll have great success. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers, Goldie. Thanks very much.